ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Global roaming is expanding to weekdays.
We did try to stay weekly. The news said no. So 5 days a week it is.
It's serious reporting on global events. Plus you're invited for a daily radio coffee table chat with me, Geraldine Doogue.
And with me, Hamish McDonald. And in 2026, Latika Burke and Kylie Morris.
Together we'll explore the global forces reshaping our world in mostly calm conversation.
Calm, Geraldine. Global roaming. Search for Global Roaming on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'd all like to think that in a crisis, we'd act with bravery, that we'd protect those around us. Just like the people who shielded total strangers with their own bodies when terrorists opened fire on Bondi Beach. Or the people who chose to run towards danger, risking their lives to help others. They've been rightly praised for the character they showed on that day. But one of them, he's largely stayed out of the public eye. And you're about to hear why. I'm Madison Connaughton, and this is the second episode of The Road to Bondi, a special series by Background Briefing. A heads up, this episode includes descriptions of the Bondi attack and references to domestic violence. Josh Robertson is the reporter on this story. Hi, Josh.
Hey, Madison. How's it going?
I'm good. I'm good, thanks. So I understand that among the things that you've looked into about this Bondi attack is the story of this man.
Yeah, that's right.
I've got to ask, there were so many people who were caught up in the violence that day. Why did you want to look at this guy in particular?
I'd seen him before in these videos taken on the day during the attack at Bondi. And there's this moment where the terrorists are lying shot on the bridge. They've lost this gunfight with police. And suddenly this third man appears on the bridge. All this is being filmed by freelance cameraman Nick Castellaro.
Bullets have just been getting sprayed everywhere and people have been getting murdered. And the focus is on that bridge.
Get on the ground! And a shot rings out. Okay. It's gunfire from police. And the third man on the bridge drops to the ground.
He nearly got shot to death and then he nearly got torn to pieces. It was high voltage, mate. It was high octane.
The scene is pretty wild. But what was even more intriguing was that in the days that followed and all these other testimonies are pouring in, this man's story hardly gets any attention. So I'm curious and I managed to get in touch with him. A few days after the Bondi attack, I head out to his place. It's a nice apartment in Sydney's western suburbs. I walk up the stairwell and there he is.
Thanks a lot.
Oh, hello. Yeah, Josh. Nice to meet you. My name is Josh. Thank you so much.
No worries.
There's a few reasons why we can't tell you his name, so we'll call him AB.
AB. Okay.
AB and his partner, we'll call her Sarah.
Nice to meet you. Please sit down.
Cheers. Have a seat.
Thank you.
What are they like?
What struck me first was that they looked like a beautiful couple.
Mm.
Their apartment was spotless, and in the corner is this Christmas tree flickering with lights. The kids have decorated that. Sarah's Christian, and AB, he's Muslim. Both of them are really hospitable.
Mm.
I want a tea or coffee, or Red Bull.
Oh, wow. Maybe a tea?
With the tea. The sugar comes on this sort of beautiful, like caramelized sugar stick.
Oh, wow. So the sugar is on a stick.
Yeah, sugar.
It's like a saffron. It has saffron on it. And it's, that's a Persian one.
That sugar make you calm. Because so saffron make you calm.
Yeah. We're both nervous a little bit.
Yeah, gotcha.
Because we've never done these things before.
It's my first time seeing AB in person. And it's not even been a week since the Bondi massacre.
When you meet him, is he okay? Like, when you go to his house, does he seem traumatised? Does he want to talk about what happened?
Yeah, you can just tell that he's been through some really intense things.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm really done.
Yeah, a long week.
As I'm stirring my sugar stick into my tea, AB starts to tell me a story. And what becomes clear is that Bondi that day is not the first time he's found himself caught up in a historic moment in the wrong place at the wrong time. He's got all this intense trauma from his past, from Iran, and that's part of the reason why he's in Australia in the first place. AB grew up in Avaaz, which is Iran's oil capital. It's in the west, near the Iraqi border. His dad had a management job in the oil business, and he grows up relatively well off. His family's got a big house. AB was actually a really talented soccer player, and he tells me that he would have gone pro in Iran had he stayed there.
Oh, so he's very serious about soccer.
He is. And I've noticed this vibe that you get from people who go on to become professional sportsmen or sportswomen. There's this physicality to them. And AB had that. He was an action man. That was my impression of him. But he's got this other side. He says he grew up a political dissident in Iran.
And I'm against my government because my dad always against them.
AB's family, they're big critics of the Iranian government.
My uncles, my dad, when someone came to my house, my dad's house, you know, when after dinner, they always talking about the government.
And because of this politically conscious family, he's the kind of guy who wants to join other people in having a say about the country's political future. And so in 2007 and 2008, when he's a teenager,
I joined to some protests in Iran.
There are these big protests sweeping the country. And AB was among thousands of people taken into police custody.
They're catching me. I done jail, torture, everything in Iran.
How old is he here?
He's like about 19.
Wow. Okay, so he's really young.
Yeah, university student age.
You don't have to go into detail, but what did they do?
I don't want to talk about it because when I'm always, I try to forget it, you know. I try to forget it when they done to me. Mentally, physically, everything.
I talked to his lawyer, Alison Battison, who was able to give me a bit more detail.
Horrendously tortured by the Iranian regime. So he wasn't just a protester, he was captured and they did terrible things to him over a period of time. We're not talking one or two nights in a cell.
If I'm still talking what they done to me, I don't want a flashback.
Eventually, AB's freed from prison because his dad puts up some property for bail and he sees his chance.
I'll run away to Turkey.
He flees the country.
He gets out of there.
I left my country. No father, no mother. No sibling, no cousins.
So he must have been seriously scared about what would happen if he stayed in Iran.
Absolutely. He thinks he's got no choice.
Mm.
But even in Turkey, it's right next to Iran, he doesn't feel completely safe. Eventually, he hears about the UN's refugee agency and he goes and gets an interview with them.
I'll give them evidence. I'll give them everything about the torture, paperwork, everything.
And he says pretty soon after that, the UN declare him a refugee, a political refugee.
It's quick, you know.
So at this stage, AB is a refugee, but he has no idea where he's going to be resettled. And then he gets a call.
Someone called me from Australia Embassy. They say we want to interview you.
Next thing you know, he's granted a humanitarian visa.
After that, I fly to Australia in November 2012. When I'm fly to Australia, I say, that's good. I think now I'm safe.
Okay, so this feels like a moment where luck's on his side.
Yeah, it does, because he's not had to languish for years in refugee camps. He's not had to risk his life by getting on a boat or paying people smugglers. Like, he's flown to Australia as a refugee. But remember, it's only been a few years since those things in Iran that AB doesn't want to talk about.
So he's still carrying all of that trauma.
Yeah, and AB does things that don't help him. He abuses drugs and alcohol. And a couple of years after arriving in Australia, he assaults his roommate. threatens to kill him and holds a knife above his head.
Wow.
He's convicted and does community service, but no jail time.
Okay.
Over the next few years, he racks up a string of offences that include assault, being armed with intent, illegal driving, and he's caught with steroids in his car. He's ordered into rehab. There are some signs of AB trying to get it together. He holds down some jobs in construction and he gets back into his sport. He plays indoor soccer and he even gets paid to play a few games for this team in North Sydney. Eventually, he meets Sarah.
I think 2017, we meet each other in Persian party.
That's where we saw each other and that's when we started like talking on the phone, meeting each other.
What did you like about him?
He was very honest. He was very gentle. And he was very kind.
Once again, it looks like a good thing is happening for AB. They get pretty serious and soon they have two children together. But AB, he's a troubled person.
That word trauma, did you notice that about him?
Yes, he told me everything when he met me. He told me everything about him. He didn't hide anything.
He's got this past and his lawyer Alison says he's sometimes sabotaging his own future.
You can see in his response to situations that might be stressful that he goes into a trauma response.
And that sometimes involves violence.
To be honest, I've done something bad in my past, you know, I've done jail.
The reason AB eventually went to jail was because of violence against Sarah.
Every time he was getting, like, we were having an argument, I feel like I have no one, like, I'm going to get hurt.
AB didn't really want to get into the detail about these things.
Can you tell me what that offence was?
I don't want to talk about my offences.
But records describe the incidents, and they show AB was violent towards Sarah repeatedly over a period of about 3 years.
Mm.
Now, at Sarah's request, I'm not going to share all the details about these assaults, but he was convicted 5 times for common assault.
This, I've got to be honest, Josh, this level of violence by AB, it's pretty shocking to hear.
Yep. And as a result of it, he went to prison twice. I talked to Sarah about this, and she thinks ultimately jail time had an impact on AB.
He did change. Like, he did become a man, a father, you know. That's why I was with him. I never left him because I saw the changes. More responsible, more respectful.
Sarah says it was her call to stand by AB after he got out of jail.
This is my decision. This is what I want. And he won't even do anything because he loves his kids.
For 3 years after his jail term ends, AB's not charged with any offences. But that run ended last December. AB got arrested again.
Okay, what for?
Low-level drug dealing charges. I can't tell you much else because there's a suppression order in place. But the thing about it is where he's arrested.
Where is he arrested?
Bondi. December 13, the night before the terrorist attack.
They park my car there, and then I'm going for another truck to Sarihi police station.
AB spends the night and most of the next day in the watch house in Surry Hills, a couple of suburbs away from Bondi. But then in the late afternoon of December 14, he gets bail.
He gets let out.
Yep, and this comes as a complete surprise to him, but there are conditions.
These are your bail documents. You are not to enter Bondi, including Bondi Beach, except to retrieve motor vehicle.
That's why I say God made it. I swear to my mom, if you...
So you were supposed to go there and pick up your car.
God made it. God made it.
So he actually turns up to Bondi early in the evening. The twilight is in. He turns up in a taxi. And Australia's deadliest terrorist attack is unfolding before him.
So he's unwittingly driving into this thing.
He's literally being driven into this terrorist attack.
The shooting assault. People, adults, kids, everyone. They walk from beach. The taxi driver tried to run away. I say, hey, wait, where are you going?
So AB is standing on Campbell Parade as people flee gunshots, and he has the choice to get himself out of harm's way. But he runs towards the danger.
I'm running to the shooter until I saw him on the bridge. He's like professional, shooting quick, 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 non-stop, non-stop, heavy, you know? He like he dancing with gun. The people, they all scared, screaming, everyone looking for some place to hide.
AB is on the opposite side of the bridge to the Jewish festival crowd the gunmen are targeting. He takes cover and he sees a police officer not far from him holding a weapon.
He stayed behind the tree and then he starts shooting the shooter.
AB says the gunman turns around and fires back at the detective.
More than 5, 6, 7 bullets in, I think, 5 seconds. Bang, 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 bang. Some bullet hit the trees. That tree, the police officer says, some bullet hit the ground, you know.
How close did bullets get to you?
I'm so close. It's like 3, 4, 5 meters to the police officer.
The gunman turns his back and starts firing in the other direction, back towards the Hanukkah festival. AB is 30 or 40 meters away, and he decides it's his chance. He starts creeping towards the bridge.
I was thinking, okay, when he reload, let me jump in up. It's 50-50. You can catch his gun or he shoot you. But I didn't know. In there, it was 2 shooter.
He hasn't seen the other shooter, which is Sajid Akram.
I was thinking only one because we are stuck behind the bridge. I didn't know what's going on from the bridge.
Suddenly, there's a lull.
I was thinking he's reload. He reload.
So he sneaks around the side of the bridge and then runs up the stairs. And that's when he sees there's not one shooter, but 2. They're both lying on the ground. They're both shot.
I saw one of them. He is laid down on belly and is bleeding. But other one, he's still alive. He hold his gun.
AB is the first person to make it to the shooters on the bridge that day. He runs up to Navid Akram, who's still alive, and he says he kicks the shooter's gun away. And this is all happening like in split seconds. But then suddenly, the police are shooting at AB.
I hit it. The bullet is gone from my face. Something like that. Everything like in slow motion.
It's an incredible moment, right? Like it, within a second, it twists.
Yeah, can you imagine? He's gone up there. He says he knows he was trying to do the right thing and he nearly gets shot dead by police.
I put my hands up. Don't shoot, don't shoot.
Suddenly, there are all these other people on the bridge.
Citizen coming out with white T-shirts, like kicking me, punching me. 2 police officers coming with gun on my face. On the ground.
Hang on, do they think he's one of the shooters?
Well, that's what it looks like, doesn't it? They think they've got one of the gunmen.
How does he get out of this?
Well, he's got this saviour. It's that detective who saw him when they were both behind the bridge.
Mm.
And get this, the same detective reportedly shot at least one of the Akrams.
I'm lucky that detective, he running up, he started yelling, he's not involved, he's not involved.
And then the uniform police and the angry locals just kind of suddenly leave AB alone.
In my belly, from in myself, I know I try to help. You know, I try to help.
AB walks away from this chaos on the bridge. Almost immediately, he sees 2 figures lying on the ground. It's the bodies of Boris and Sophia Gurman. They're a Jewish couple who were killed after Boris tackled Sajid Akram when he first got out of the car with his gun when the attack started. Boris and Sophia, who've been shot dead, are lying there holding one another.
When I saw them, they hug each other. They hug each other. I think, yeah, they hug each other. Is don't cry.
That's Sarah crying.
I mean, it is heartbreaking. That image of the Germans lying there holding each other.
Yeah. And AB, after seeing that, he goes down to the park to try and lend a hand.
And this is the park where the Hanukkah festival had been. This is where the shooters were aiming.
Yep.
There's blood everywhere. Bodies everywhere. But try to help.
This is before emergency services and ambulance officers have turned up in large numbers. In Nick Castellaro's footage, you can actually see him trying to hail a paramedic to help this one man.
We find someone like a blanket and towel. We cover his face because they're dead already. Everyone tried to help.
This scene, this carnage, it's completely overwhelming to him.
I'm in by shock. I can't handle it. I'm just thinking, I just want to hug my kids. I want to hug my missus. I want to hug my family. I just want to go home.
Meanwhile, Sarah has no idea where AB is. She's pregnant with their third child and she's lying on the couch taking a nap.
Because he's gotten picked up by the police the night before, right? Has she not heard from him since the night before?
Well, she knows he's been arrested, but she doesn't know he's been let out. She doesn't really know where he is because the police have got his phone and he hasn't been able to call her.
I hear someone like just coming inside. I'm like, who's that walking inside my house?
When I'm open the door, when the kids are running, I hug them. I'm start crying again. Oh, my kids asking me, why are you crying? Because they never see I'm crying.
He was just like white, pale, shaking. His clothes, because he was wearing black. He had like a white dust everywhere. And he started crying. I was so afraid. I didn't know like what was going on.
I said, oh, good dad, I'm not crying. I'm happy. I kissed them. My missus coming. I hug her. She asking me, what happened to you?
He started like hugging me, hugging the kids, crying. And then I kept saying, what's wrong?
He's just not saying anything.
It sounds like he's in shock.
He says to Sarah, check the news, and then he shuts the bathroom door, he gets into the shower, and he stays there for like 2 hours.
Did he tell you what he was thinking in that moment?
Well, there is something else hanging over his head, and it's not about Bondi. It's not about what he's seen there, not about the near-death experience he's just had. It's about his future. Remember I told you that he ended up in jail for family violence offences?
Of course.
So that meant he fell foul of immigration rules in Australia because he had a 12-month sentence. So he failed what the Australian government calls the character test.
The government rules say if you're done over 2 months, we can't cancel your visa.
If you're here on any visa, if you're not a citizen, if you fail that character test, they can take your visa away. And you become an unlawful non-citizen, even if you're a refugee.
That's why they cancel my visa. They cancel my permanent resident.
In 2023, AB spends most of the year in an immigration detention centre. But his lawyer, Alison Battison, then challenges the decision at an independent tribunal. And the tribunal said,
actually, we think you've got this wrong. You cancelled this man's refugee visa. It should be reinstated.
In delivering the decision, the tribunal noted AB's long record of offending, particularly in what they said was the distasteful and reprehensible area of family violence. They confirmed AB had failed the character test, but they gave him his visa back, mainly because they decided it was in the best interest of his children and because of his ties to Australia through Sarah, who gave evidence she wanted him to stay. They also found he would likely face persecution if he returned to Iran. So he's released.
Wow. So the family ties outweighed the character test. That's what gets him out of detention.
Yeah, that's right. But the tribunal said its decision was very marginal and that AB was on notice. In the months that followed, AB was back home.
He got released from the detention centre. He was working. He was with us.
Then something happened.
And the police officer just came there like, oh, because of what you done in the past, they canceled your visa. And then they just took him, they sent him to detention center.
By then, the political climate had turned against refugees with criminal histories like AB. The immigration minister at the time, Andrew Giles, was coming under this huge pressure over a High Court decision known as NZYQ.
It's the decision which set free hundreds of immigration detainees.
The case surrounds a Rohingya man from Myanmar, known in court as NZYQ.
I remember this. This was really big news at the time.
Yeah, this High Court decision found that people like AB could not be held in detention. So a lot of people are released from immigration detention centres, and some of them had very serious criminal histories, and the media and the federal opposition jump all over it.
People who had committed rape and murder, people who had committed sexual offences against children.
I have said repeatedly that if it were up to me, all of these people would be in detention.
In the months after AB got out of detention, he wasn't convicted of anything else. But then in 2024, his case came across the minister's desk.
Minister Giles, overriding the independent decision maker from the tribunal, made a personal decision to cancel that visa.
But where does that leave him? Like, if the minister's cancelled his visa, can he still be in Australia? What's his situation?
Well, he's in limbo. He's on this bridging visa R. R is for removal. But as a political refugee, AB can't be sent back to Iran. But there's this tiny island nation in the Pacific, Nauru. And the federal government signs a deal with Nauru, which agrees to take some of these people that Australia doesn't want. And for AB, the risk is he could be sent there anytime.
He could be sent to Nauru at any time.
That's right.
What about Sarah and the kids?
Well, they're Australian citizens, so they'd be able to stay here. He'd be deported to Nauru.
Mm.
And this is the situation he's in the lead up to that terrible day at Bondi. And so on that date, he makes it home safely to see his family, but he knows he could still be permanently separated from them at any time.
I think about it every day when I hear something, when someone knocks my door, when my phone is ringing.
We have that fear, like they just come and take him away.
Sarah says he has nightmares.
I'm trying to, like, get cancer because he's been very traumatized. At night when he sleeps, he screams in his sleep. And then I don't leave him alone. He's not doing good.
The Australian government has, on compassionate grounds, fast-tracked permanent residency for a number of people who were at Bondi on the day of the attack. AB's lawyer, Alison Battison, is asking the government to reassess his character in light of his actions on the day.
People are complex and there are grey areas. He has some adverse criminal records, but then in the moment that counts, shows great, great bravery. His actions that day should absolutely count towards why someone like him should stay in Australia.
The Department of Home Affairs declined to comment on his case. They told me that they assess each residency application on a case-by-case basis on its merits. But last month, the department reminded his lawyer that AB had the right to ask the minister to allow him to apply for a spouse visa.
Now, it's very unusual to have this suggestion made in these sort of circumstances, so we're taking it as a very hopeful sign.
So that sounds to me like the door is not totally shut, at least yet.
Mm.
How is AB doing after all of this?
Well, I caught up with AB and Sarah a few weeks back. This time they were with their kids.
Can I come to your house?
You bet. You bet. Yep. The kids are super cute. And AB took them out, you know, playing on the street, racing around, you know, using the scooter.
Get your scooter. Go next to Baba. Baba.
But, you know, I'm talking to Sarah and she tells me AB isn't sleeping or eating. He's chain smoking and he's smashing the energy drinks.
I can't sleep, to be honest. I can't sleep. I have 24 hours, cigarette. I can't sleep. You know, my family is involved too. Always I'm thinking I'm a tough person, you know, but it's too much.
He's clearly struggling He told me he hasn't even been able to watch that video of himself on the bridge of Bondi. But Sarah's watched it.
Yes, it was very brave, what he did. It's very hard for anyone to risk their life too, you know. I'm proud of him to say, you know, for doing that.
AB says he wasn't thinking about his future when he did it.
To be honest, I'm not thinking about visa. I'm not thinking about nothing that time. I'm a human. I'm living in Australia. I want this country always safe for my kids, for myself too, for my missus, for everyone. I try to help people. That's it.
AB's hoping he won't get that knock on the door from immigration officials. That despite his criminal record, speaking publicly could change his fortunes again. But it's hard to know what will happen after someone tells their story. There was another man at Bondi that day whose story was taken out of his hands. He became one of the faces of the terrorist attack. His image was spread right around the world. And then things spiraled out of control.
And I just replied to him with a photo that showed me on the ground, bloodied, hit.
People share the picture and they talk about it.
Obviously, it wasn't me. It took an entire millisecond to figure that out.
AI was used 15 hours later only to visualize what people were already talking about.
That's coming up in the final episode of The Road to Bondi. If you've been impacted by family or domestic violence, you can get support by calling Full Stop on 1800 385 578. If it's an emergency, call 000. If you're concerned about your behaviour or someone else's, you can call the Men's Referral Service on 1300 766 491. Background Briefing's sound producers are Lila Schunner and Ingrid Wagner. Sound engineering by Anne-Marie de Bettencourt. Music composition by Tegan Nichols. Fact-checking by Justine Landis-Hanley. Our rollout producer is Ben Sveen. The supervising producer is Max Chalmers. And the executive producer is Fanu Falali. The reporter on this story is Josh Robertson, and I'm Madison Connaughton. To hear more episodes, search for the Background Briefing podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks for listening.